Scripture reading this morning will be taken from John chapter 13, the first five verses. John 13, the first five verses. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During the supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him.
This incident of Jesus washing the feet of the disciples has certainly been one that has struck the imagination of believers through all of these centuries. It is a poignant moment, is it not, when Jesus, in these last few moments of peace, before he will begin to endure the sufferings that he endures in the garden, and then in the trials, and then finally on the cross, where he'll be crucified, in these final few moments of peace, that he lays aside his garments and girds himself with a towel and washes the feet of the disciples. Jesus and the disciples are gathered here in this upper room away from the crowds, both the crowds that are pressing upon him for miracles, so much so that on occasion he has had to escape into some faraway region just to get away from the press of them, escape from those who have been trying to get him to bring down more bread from heaven and to give them some kinds of gifts, and also locked away in this upper room because here now they are in Jerusalem, where he has on three occasions already almost been taken by the enemy in order to put him to death. Here they are isolated, and the disciples' heads are filled with all kinds of ideas, I am sure, all kinds of plans and speculations, all kinds of fears and trepidation. They have just witnessed a few days earlier Jesus riding into the city of Jerusalem, crowds coming out and shouting, "Hosanna, Hosanna," to this Messiah, this King who has come in to rescue them and to save them. They have seen Jesus going back out of the city each night because there is some concern about what the religious leaders are going to do about all of this. They are filled with these ideas. Maybe now the kingdom is coming. They have no idea what it is to be like. They have all kinds of speculations. James and John had gotten their mother to go to Jesus and to say, "Now when you come into your kingdom, make sure one of my sons is on the right and one is on the left." And Jesus says, "You have no idea what you're asking about. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm going to drink?" And they say, "Well, yes, we are." They have no idea what is coming. They have some sense somehow that something great is about to happen, that this Jesus is the center of that greatness that is to come upon them and upon the city of Jerusalem, upon all the world. They have some idea that something momentous is afoot. And here they are speculating about that and wondering about it. And maybe even looking around at the fact that here they are in an upper room kind of hiding away. And Jesus gets up, lays aside his outer garments, wraps himself with a towel, pours the water into the basin that has been left there prepared for that purpose, and begins to wash their feet. I just can't even put myself in their place to imagine how they must have thought about that. It certainly was a shock to them, that's for sure. That's not what they were expecting to happen. Of all the things they might have thought is going to happen, that was not one that they were considering. And indeed, Peter protests You remember as the reading continues there in John chapter 13 and verse 6. So he came to Simon Peter, and he said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" When Jesus answered and said to him, "What I do you will not realize now, but you will understand hereafter." And Peter said to him, "Never shall you wash my feet." And Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." And Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." And Jesus said to him, "He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. And you're clean, but not all of you." For he knew the one who was betraying him. For this reason, he said, "Not all of you are clean." So Peter, of course, protests. Not surprising that Peter's the one whose voice we hear on this occasion. Seems like really in some ways, though I always thought maybe, you know, he's washing this one and that one and the other one, and then he got to Peter, and Peter protests at that point. Seems more likely that Peter's the one he began with, because that would have created some kind of consternation as he's washed the feet of one disciple and then another. And I'm pretty sure they were going to be some kind of conversation about that. "What are you doing, Lord?" And I'm pretty sure Peter would have been at the forefront of that. "What are you doing washing his feet?" Had he started, Jesus started with some other disciple. So it's pretty clear to me that he starts with Peter. And Peter says, "What are you doing? Are you washing my feet?" And Jesus says, "You've got no idea really what I am doing at this point. Later on, you're going to understand about this." There would have been some kind of conversation. What exactly does this mean? And you wonder about this as Jesus is washing their feet, even after Peter protests. And Jesus says, "If I don't wash your feet, you don't have any part of me." Peter says, "Well, go ahead and wash my hands and my head too. I want all of that." He says, "No, you don't need all of that. All of you are clean, except for your feet," which I guess was the practice of the day, that they would walk in the sandals in those dusty streets, and their feet would be dirty, though the rest of them would be acceptably clean for a common meal. "That's all that you need at this point in time, and I'm washing your feet for you." But that wouldn't have received much attention on most occasions, but here on this occasion it certainly does receive some attention about that. The foot washing in general, something that happened in that period area of the country apparently for centuries, going all the way back to Abraham. We read about it in Genesis chapter 18 where Abraham encounters what he doesn't know at the time are angels from the Lord, messengers from the Lord, though maybe he does recognize them, but he seems to offer them the usual kind of hospitality in Genesis chapter 18. And in verse 3, it says, verse 2, "When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent to door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. And he said, 'My Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourself under the tree. And then I will bring you bread and you may refresh yourself.'" Just the usual hospitality, not just something to drink, not just something to eat, but water to wash their feet with. When Abraham himself sent his servant to Laban to find a wife for his son Isaac in Genesis chapter 22, when the servant entered Laban's house, then he brought water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him as well. And David, when he brought Uriah back from the battlefield and brought him in to feed him, he offered water for him to wash his feet. It was the common practice in those days. And even in the first century when Jesus lived, it seemed like it was the expected form of hospitality. In Luke chapter 7, you remember that as Jesus goes into the house of Simon the Pharisee there to have a meal with him, in Luke chapter 7, he is there going to encounter the woman who's washing his feet, and then they're going to be upset about him, about that. And then Jesus is going to say in Luke 7 and verse 44 to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house, and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has, wet my feet with her tears and wipe them with her hair. The expectation of any guest going into any home in those days apparently was there would be water and a towel for them to wash their feet. And maybe even a servant provided for that task to wash their feet. But now here they are in this room, Jesus and his disciples. And apparently there is water provided and a basin provided, because all things have been ready for them to celebrate the feast of the Passover here in this upper room. At Jesus' command, all things have been made ready, and they come in and all things are ready, including the basin and the water and the towel for washing their feet. But now, no one is washing their feet. The disciples didn't even wash their own feet, even though the water was provided. And here is Jesus washing their feet. The master washing the feet of the disciples. Though slaves very often did this, or the person did it for themselves, sometimes there seems to be an indication that on special occasions, as a matter of special significance, a person who was not a slave would wash someone else's feet. In 1 Samuel chapter 25, when Abigail and Nabal and David had come together in that kind of interesting sort of conflict, and David, after Nabal's death, sends to Abigail and offers to make her his wife. In 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 40, when the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel and spoke to her, saying, "David has sent for us to you to take you as his wife," she arose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your maidservant is a maid to wash the feet of my Lord's servants." I don't know that she actually washed their feet on this occasion. I think it was more like a figure of speech, though maybe it happened on many occasions as well. This was an expression of gratitude. This was an expression of her joy on this occasion and for this blessing that has come to her. She, a widow, and probably then left, as many widows would have been, in difficult circumstances, is going to be made David's wife. A matter of great rejoicing, a matter of great gratitude. And she expressed that, said, "I would be, and I am, unworthy of this. I'm a maid to wash your feet." But now Jesus is washing their feet. And you wonder, the silence as he washes their feet and they look at one another. Peter has protested, but Jesus has overcome that protest. What else is there left to say as he washes their feet? Jesus then, when he finishes, returns the basin, the towel, puts back on his outer garment and sits down. In John 13 and verse 12, said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? Do you know what I have done to you?" And of course, they have no idea. Well, maybe, I guess. In John 13 and verse 6, it came to Peter, and Peter said, "Do you wash my feet?" And Jesus said, "I do. What I do now you don't realize, but later you will." And now Jesus says, "Do you understand what I've done for you?" And it's like, well, yeah, you wash my feet. Jesus said, no, there's something greater significance to this that's going to come clear to you later. That so many things are going to come clear to them later. They don't understand what the significance of that event was. They really didn't understand much of what Jesus did or much of what he said to them, really. Nearly every parable Jesus spoke confused the people. Nearly every miracle he did caused some kind of consternation. Nearly every one of his teachings was misunderstood, even by his closest disciples, even about his primary mission there. Over and over we read that expression, as in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 11, when Jesus says, "How is it that you don't understand? How is it that you don't understand?" He says on that occasion in Matthew 16 and verse 11, about the leaven I'm talking about is not bread, it's the leaven of the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And really, that kind of lack of understanding about what Jesus was doing and what he was saying, that began at the very beginning. You remember in Luke chapter 2, when Jesus had gotten separated from his parents and they looked for him, and then they came to find him, and they finally found him in the temple. And he said, "Didn't you know I would be here in my Father's house? I'd be about my Father's business." And Luke chapter 2 and verse 50 says, "But they did not understand." Well, and of course, it's a hard thing to understand because it had never happened before in the history of the world. One of the great things that was ever going to happen in the history of the world, maybe the greatest thing that ever happened in the history of the world, Jesus coming into the world, die on the cross for our sins. And they don't understand that. No wonder. It says over and over again, they didn't understand that. Mark chapter 9 and verse 31. Mark chapter 9 and verse 31, Jesus specifically says to them, "The Son of Man is to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and when he's been killed, he will rise 3 days later." And the very next verse says, but they did not understand this statement. And they were afraid to ask him. Because it's like, a lot of people today, when they read the Bible, and it says something pretty plain, but it's not something that they expect, or it's not something they like, they want to interpret it allegorically or something. They don't want to interpret it literally. Jesus says as plainly as he possibly could to them, "I'm going to be killed, and on the third day I'm going to rise again," and they didn't understand it. Well, they'd never encountered anything like that before. It takes a lot to recognize the truth of a statement like that. And they didn't understand it. They didn't understand it till long afterwards that he was going to die on the cross. He told them over and over and over again, and they didn't understand. They never quite got it until after it was already accomplished. But one of the things that is interesting about this, though nobody understood what Jesus was about, though nobody understood the significance of his teaching or the significance of the things that he was doing or the culmination of his work, it didn't stop him from doing what he was going to do. Their lack of understanding had nothing to do about precluding his work. In John chapter 5 and in verse 15, Jesus says specifically, I think about this kind of a lack of understanding. He says in John 5 and verse 15, as the man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who'd made him well, and for this reason the Jews were persecuting Jesus because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. And on verse 17 he says, "My Father is working till now, and I myself am working." I don't care whether you agree. I don't care whether you understand. I don't care whether you oppose me. I am doing the work of my Father, and I will continue to do the work of my Father. And now here he is about to carry out those very things that he has told them about so plainly, and they still don't understand that. They got no idea. I mean, they're beginning to get a little concerned about exactly what's going to happen here. But they really don't understand it, though he has told them as plainly as he possibly could. And he gets up from the table and he washes their feet and he says, "Do you understand what I've done for you?" And they certainly didn't understand that. Peter didn't understand that. Jesus comes to him, he says, "You're going to wash my feet?" And Jesus says, "You're going to have to submit to this, Peter. You're going to have to sit there and let me wash your feet. Otherwise, you have no part in me." And they sit there and they watch and they wait while he does that. And I don't know. I tried to think about this. How long is it going to take Jesus to wash those 24 feet? I don't know. We could all practice and see how long it takes. I don't know how dirty the feet were. I don't know how many times you got to empty the water out and get more water and put in there. I'm pretty sure it took a while. At the very best I could imagine was, you know, you just dip the feet and wipe it off and dip the feet and wipe it off. You get done maybe in 15 minutes, more likely 30 minutes, where they sit there and wait for Jesus to do this. They look at one another, or they've refused to look at one another because they're ashamed. Jesus is washing their feet. And I don't even know whether there had been some argument about that already. There was the basin, there was the water, there was the towel, everything was prepared. They come in, usually your feet are washed, or you wash your own feet. And nobody had washed their feet, and they didn't wash their own feet. They sat there. Maybe they were concerned, look, this is all going to be over one of these days when Jesus comes into the kingdom and we're sitting on the right hand, left hand, we're mighty men of power. We'll have people to wash our feet, then we won't have to be sitting here without our feet washed or doing it ourselves. I don't know. But I do know it was a powerful moment for them. And Jesus says, do you understand what I've done for you? And of course, there are plenty of people today who don't even understand what Jesus did for them. Some suggest that this whole washing of their feet is just an allegorical symbol of the Lord's Supper, which John doesn't tell about in this occasion on John chapter 13. But the other Gospels do tell us about the Lord's Supper and don't tell us about the washing of the feet. Some people have suggested that it is a symbol of baptism. Well, and of course, I don't understand how washing the feet is a symbol of baptism, when in fact baptism is a representation of death and a burial and a resurrection. Of course, I guess, you know, if you're going to turn baptism into sprinkling on the head, you could turn it into washing of the feet too, but it's not those things. But it clearly is this. It clearly is an indication of Jesus humbling himself, because here they are, seated, and Jesus is bowing before them to wash their feet. And it is safe to say that he intends us to learn some particular lesson from that. And maybe we don't get all of the lesson, but some of it pretty obvious, that he stooped low to provide a service for his disciples. In the same way that he stooped low in coming from heaven to provide a service for us. It certainly is a lesson in humility. And that's what Jesus says in John chapter 13 and beginning in verse 13 when he says, do you understand what I've done for you? John 13 and 13, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for that's what I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. For I give you an example that you should do also as I did to you. Truly I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who has sent him. If you know these things, you're blessed if you do them. And of course, I want to think once again about those guys and what they must have thought when Jesus said, do you know what I've done for you? This is an example. You need to do this for one another. And John could say, wash Peter's feet? Are you kidding me? He's got a big mouth. He's got bigger feet. And they're always dirty. And Peter say, wash John's feet? He already thinks he's better than the rest of us anyway. Well, maybe they wouldn't have been quite that ugly toward one another. But I'm pretty sure they were not very interested in washing one another's feet. Many people today, of course, read this passage and think what Jesus is saying is literally, here is a part of what your fellowship is supposed to be. You're supposed to wash one another's feet when you come together. It is just as much a ritual established on the last day Jesus was together with his disciples as is the Lord's Supper. But I don't think it's really a lesson in actual foot washing, but a spiritual lesson of service. It's more likely that he's pointing to this idea of a willingness to do for others whatever is necessary, regardless of how humbling it might be. It's a lesson to say, I have come into this world greater than any of you could ever imagine. I have come into this world to serve you. And if I can serve you, then you ought to be willing to serve one another. Don't let any one of you think to himself, I'm too good to do that for someone else. Because you're not going to be nearly as great in comparison to one another as I am in comparison to you. And yet I came down from heaven and I've washed your feet. You need to do these kind of things for one another when those things need to be done. If a man is churlish and unpleasant, do not say, I'm not going to go help that guy because I deserve to be treated better than he'd treat me. No, you need to go provide some comfort in the Lord wherever you can. Humble yourself in relationship to one another. There is no kind of distinction between us in the kingdom of heaven that is anywhere as great as the significance of the difference between Jesus and these disciples, or we as disciples, and he washed their feet. I'm almost willing to think this, that they looked at that water when they came in, and that towel, and that basin, and they were like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't know. They sat down and one of them kind of looked at it. They just weren't going to do it. They weren't going to humble themselves at that point. And Jesus, knowing full well what's in their hearts, gets up and washes their feet. What a contrast to the self-centeredness of the age in which we live. People would be willing to do those things for one another. That's one of the things that sets apart the kingdom of heaven from the rest of the world. The rest of the world is about getting ahead. It's about establishing your credentials. It's about demonstrating some kind of hierarchy in society, but not in the kingdom of heaven. Even in the kingdom of heaven, the lesson is to say that those who are rulers among you, the elders, are to be examples and servants. It's an entirely different kind of order of things than in the world. You work in a corporation, you work in a business, usually they're bureaucracies. They have some chain of command. They have some organizational chart. And here these guys are up here, and there these guys are down here, and then here the rest of us are down here. That's just the way the world works. And then people get to the church and they want to make the church just like this. We have this hierarchy. We got the elders and the deacons. And then maybe you get some kind of argument about what the preacher goes above the elders or under the elders. And that's what causes so many problems in so many churches. But one thing is for sure, we got these guys up here and then the rest of them down here. That's not the way it is in the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says. No one of you is greater than your master, and your master washed your feet. You need to learn that lesson. You need to apply that lesson. And it certainly is a lesson in love. John 13 and verse 1 begins with exactly that fact. Now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. I don't know exactly what kind of emotion that Jesus feels in this kind of love. I certainly know that we have, you know, this kind of full feeling in our hearts and in our chest when we look at the ones that we love, our children, our aged parents, our hopefully, sometimes, our brethren. And we have that feeling of what could we do for them. Jesus loved them. And he did everything he possibly could for them. It would have been so easy to have said, look, you know, these are the last few moments of peace I got before Satan comes to tempt me in the garden, before I have to experience the trial before the Sanhedrin, the trial before Pilate, trial before Herod, before I have to hang on the cross. Just give me a few moments to myself, guys. But that's not the way it was. He came into the world to offer the ultimate service, to offer the ultimate humbling of himself. And he looks and he sees the need. And he took care of it. He loved them. He loved them so much that he even cared about the minor things. Their dirty feet. And if we care about people, we care about the little things. Sometimes, of course, we care about more about ourselves. And we want to do the big things because big things are important. Then we want to do the little things. But the little things are where we really love, demonstrate our love. The mother absolutely will notice the smallest smudge on her daughter's dress before she goes out. And sometimes, of course, the daughter doesn't appreciate that too much, but the mother notices those little things. And the most thoughtful gifts that we ever give are probably not the ones that, you know, we we gave the most thought to. Now, what big thing could I do for them? The most thoughtful gifts we give, the ones that are usually the most appreciated, are the ones that come out of having just listened to what the other person has to say. Maybe something that seemed relatively small or trivial, but it's because they mentioned it, because they have some need for it, because it is a part of their life, and you recognize that it was a part of their life, and you provided that. That's what makes it a thoughtful gift. And Jesus certainly knows about these disciples and how they are afflicted with the fears and the temptation of the world. He knows what they need. He knows they need salvation. He knows ultimately every man, woman, and child who grows up to the age of accountability in this world needs to be saved from Satan and his destiny, needs to be saved from their own sin and their own conscience. And he came down out of heaven to provide that. For God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. He knows how much they need. He knows it better than they know it. And he knows they need their feet washed too. And he knows no servant has been provided to wash their feet. And he knows, I guess, too, they're not going to do it for whatever the reason. So he undertakes that lowly task. And we're like amazed that Jesus would humble himself to washing their feet. And we have no idea. He who was in heaven with God, the full essence of God himself, and emptied himself and took on the form of a servant, and died on the cross. And to think that his humbling himself to taking on the form of a servant and washing their feet was something greater than that. No. He came into the world to humble himself, to serve them. And that's what he was doing. And it might seem, you know, like it's a distasteful task. We might be willing to do something heroic for other people, but to do something distasteful and repugnant like washing their feet. But when you do it for people you love, it is not distasteful at all. I'm amazed, and I admit I have no capacity for this, but I've known two or three people who have taken on the responsibility for an invalid child, and they take care of that child who can't take care of themselves, even as they grow into adulthood physically, but not able to take care of themselves, and wash them. And it's like, that's amazing to me. And I know it becomes a burden day after day after day, but they do it out of love. And it's what they do because they love them. And I thought about that, and I couldn't help but think about it. I thought, surely there's got to be a better illustration of that. But Neil Diamond's song about "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother." He says, "The road is long and many a winding turn that leads us to who knows where. But I'm strong, strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy, he's my brother." It's amazing what we can do for people when we love them. What would have been repulsive, distasteful at least, becomes really just what we do, and not a problem or a burden at all because we love them. And Jesus cared enough about them to wash their feet. But really, he says, "Do you know what I'm doing for you? Do you know what?" And yeah, you're washing our feet. They'll need to be washed again tomorrow. No, there's something at a greater and a deeper level than this, which this demonstrates. He cared about them more than they knew. And you know the context too. Luke chapter 22, where Luke is leading up to this same occasion, though Luke doesn't tell about the washing of the feet. He tells about the upper room and the establishing of the Lord's Supper. But in Luke chapter 22 and verse 24, there arose a dispute among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. That's why I think probably they were already arguing about that. Kingdom's coming. victory is going to be ours. Jesus is going to be the king. We've been with him from the beginning. We're going to be important people. And we walked into that upper room, and there's the basin, and there's the water, and there's the towel, and no servant to wash their feet. There was no way in the world they were going to wash one another's feet. Maybe they were even disputing about that. Who's going to do this? But Jesus is concerned about their relationship to one another, not just about their dirty feet. He was concerned about their souls. He's concerned about ours as well. And Jesus could say to us, "Do you really understand what I'm doing? Do you really understand what I have done for you?" There is this deeper spiritual meaning, I think, of his washing the feet on this occasion just before the day he's going to be hung on the cross to save us from our sins. And of course, I think we need to make sure we understand this lesson. There is an application here of real relationship between those of us who are members of the kingdom of heaven, and that we should be willing to wash one another's feet if there's a need. He is not establishing a ritual in the same way that he established the Lord's Supper, that we should on regular occasions wash one another's feet. But it is a lesson in love that says we will do what needs to be done for other people. But I think even more than this is to remember that what Jesus is saying, "Do you understand what I am doing for you? Do you understand how much I have humbled myself in order to provide for your needs? Not just the washing of their feet, but the salvation of their souls. Do we understand what he has done for us? Do we understand what he sacrificed in giving up heaven, being in the form of a man and dying on the cross?" We've been singing about heaven this morning. And we can only vaguely imagine that, though some of the poets have put it in kind of amazing words about the things that will be there and the things that won't be there in heaven and the way we'll feel and the things that we'll do when we're in heaven. But do you understand that Jesus gave all of that up so that we could have that? Do we understand about the greatness of the gift that he has given us? And if we understand what Jesus has done for us, then how can we not respond to his gracious invitation when he says, "Come to me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest"? And how can we not look forward to that occasion when we get to heaven and we'll be with Jesus for all of eternity? If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, not a member of the kingdom of heaven, if you haven't rendered obedience to Jesus through repentance and submission to baptism, then you need to do that this morning so that he can provide for you the gifts that he intends to do so. Let's encourage one another as we stand and sing.